Mishloka, our next speaker, Nate Willis.
Hi. Well, I have good news. The non-font related portions of the event are now officially over. We can get down to business. Anyway, as Tom implied, I'm Nate Willis, and I'm an impressionable young PhD student from over in the UK. I'm going to talk about a specification that I worked on a couple years ago and how I discovered that choosing a license, or the best license for it, isn't simple. The options there are scarce, the particulars are real particular, and there isn't much in the way of like best practices or guidance, especially if you want the license on a specification to embody freedom-y principles. And I'm also going to try and make the case along the way that even small project specifications like this matter, and therefore this warrants some consideration. Weirdly enough, I think this is the third time I've spoken in the legal and policy dev room, but this is not going to be like my first talk in which I gave a lot of information about fonts and things like that. It's going to be a lot more like my second one, which is about photo policies, in the sense that I just rattle off a bunch of stuff needing discussion and then nothing happens. But I have decided that is science. I was watching this documentary, and there's a reference at the end, just so you can get that cleared up. It's about the research process, and two of the people interviewed brought up this interesting principle, which I'm going to put to the test, which is to say, talking about it is at least good enough. And I genuinely want to know, though, like what everyone else here thinks. So as we're going, please look deep into your soul. And for the lawyers, I guess, ask someone sitting near you. But I do have to talk about fonts briefly so you have some context to orient your thinking, because not all specifications and not all projects are going to be the same. So let's go back to the beginning. Back in 2018, I was hired to work in this repository on GitHub, which is a specification for text shaping. Text shaping is something that there is a free software library for called HarfBuzz, which is excellent. But there isn't a specification for how it's supposed to work. And so this company, YesLogic, in Australia, who make document conversion software, were working on their own shaping engine written in Rust. And the lack of a spec was a huge obstacle. So in our project, I went through the HarfBuzz source code, and I pestered Vedad and Khalid and people who work on it with a lot of questions and wrote a specification. YesLogic, the team, then used that to implement their own shaper, AllSorts, which is also open source, which sort of put that to the test. And initially, the goal of writing this in a specification was that we wanted to have OpenType or some other standards-owning organization officially take it up, which didn't happen. So we kept the license out of the repo at that time just to avoid the hassle of having to relicense it, as well as to hammer home the fact that it was unofficial and still a work in progress. Like I said, most of the stuff was 2018 when I wasn't doing anything else. I've continued to make some updates to it, especially when the YesLogic people find a bug or something. But this unlicensedness does need to change. People do find it useful. They cite it even without the license, especially people who work on publishing and font support tools and things. You might be thinking, well, wait a minute. We have OpenType. We have Unicode. So what exactly is the problem here that needs specifying? Well, here's the thing. This is the bit of fonts that I do have to talk about. Unicode defines how language is encoded. It doesn't know or say anything about what's inside of a font. And OpenType defines how fonts are structured, but it doesn't know what's in the document that you might use with that font active. Silicon Valley doesn't want you to know this, but it's the truth. Here's an example. Unicode says every letter has one unambiguous encoding. Right, so in an OpenType font, every time you see that code point, you look it up, and you know it's an A, so you take that bit sequence in the glyph table, you find it, hopefully there's an image of an A, and you put that into the document or on the screen or whatever. However, there are some languages that have exotic behavior like this. Unicode says E with things on top is a different letter than E. And in most cases, the things are also a different encoding code point. So the person who typed that, they might have had that symbol on the left on their keyboard, but they might have actually typed the other two things instead. And what if the font has one of those but not the other, or vice versa, or any of those permutations? Some layer in the environment has to make that match and know what to do in that situation. But it's not just exotic languages. There are widely used writing systems like this one, where the whole one image per byte sequence code point just isn't enough to get text on the screen. Like when they connect, they can be connecting in arbitrary ways. Remember, Unicode says each letter just has one encoding code point. So in those where there's connected, multiple images are required. OpenType just says just put a bunch of them into your font with the same code point assigned, and then you can put tags on them to say this one's for initial letters, this one's for connecting in the middle, and so on. But nothing describes, OpenType doesn't tell you how the software determines that it needs to grab that variant or this one, or what order to do it in, or how to even know to look. That's what shaping is. It's not in either place, even though both of those standards exist, because it's sort of part of the environment. So that's what we're specifying, and I thought I should say that because for assigning a license for a specification, you need to know what it is. This means we're defining a behavior, for example. It's not a format. It's not a codec. It's something functional, but it gets down to real specific detail, like there's regular expressions in there. But it's also a single component, so it's not back and forth like communications protocols are, where you have to worry about two implementations talking to each other. Importantly, people need it to be consistent across all implementations, though. Like, that's the point of specifying it. Because documents have unbounded lifespans, and they can travel anywhere. So people on both ends want to know if you write an email or a paper or something, and you send it to someone else, regardless of what OS they're on, they expect it to look the same. And that kind of means that the specification needs to support proprietary implementations in addition to free ones. Some of those are factors that would be different in other specifications or other things you could specify or write standards for. There's stuff like interoperability tests that matter when you're doing like network protocols that aren't really applicable here. For this, when there's a problem, you do that with regression tests and diffs and things like that. So this is worth defining a specification for because, like YesLogic, people are going to write new engines that do it. There's always a new language or a new environment, like a game engine or something that has a different stack to it. So the spec seems to work. We want to license it. What do we choose that meets the need? Pick a specification license. That'd be great if it existed, ideally. If there was an open specification license or a couple of them, we'd just use that. There's not. In the absence of that, most people seem to just opt for other licenses, which makes sense. It's understandable. I know a little bit about documentation and licenses, so I can talk about some of those generic options. The GNU Free Documentation License has some pretty inconvenient things in it, like the invariant clause, which people can invoke. Even if I wouldn't assign the invariant clause to things in the specification, the downstream recipient might, and I don't want to imply that burden for other people. The Creative Commons licenses, obviously there's a bunch of those. The restrictive ones would not be useful, like non-commercial. But they just address different use cases and ideas, in my opinion, because they're meant for creative and cultural work, which is also true for software licenses applied to standards. Like, they talk about derivative works in a way that makes sense for executable code or for performing things in the Creative Commons case. But they're always concerned with the document itself, whereas I think in a standard or a specification, you want to be clear about the difference between the contents and implementing them and the document itself. Now, the other trivial solution might be just to pick the license that matches what you have to interface with. That's not always easy. I'm going to show you why for our particular case. You think OpenType. It says open right there in the name. It's an open standard. And if you Google it, you see, oh, there's a URL there. And that's what it looks like. We zoom in on that left column. That's where all the tables are. Enhance. But you see all the stuff in lowercase letters there? That's actually from the TrueType specification, which is there. Let's go back one more time. Enhance. Except for the capital letters CFF and CFF2. Those are from PostScript, and they live there in PDF form, oddly enough. Then there's also the ISO spec, which is officially what OpenType actually is. We don't really seem to talk about that very much. And then there's the SFNT spec at the bottom. I know you can't really read the URL, but that's a dead link anyway, so it doesn't matter. Is that convoluted? Yes. The billionaires don't want you to know this, but the reason is it was written by three companies who didn't really want to talk to each other. Right? Their rivals, their implementations are secret, so as little as possible is put into it. And this is not going to go away. This is how it works. This is this arrangement is what ended the font wars in the 90s. You know, this is Versailles you're looking at here. So bad news, yeah, but that's what it is. On the other hand, Unicode is a lot nicer. Unicode is very straightforward. There are a couple of different licenses applied to different things. It's sort of split up by the URL patterns there. There's a lot of components. Some of these things are in older licenses because they're from much older releases, committee reports, national standards, things like that. The old stuff is there. The neo-historian capitalists don't want you to know this, but the older material still matters for things like archives and legacy documents and stuff like that. Again, document lifespans don't have an end to them. There's no limit. And I don't want to harp on the particulars too much, but just I do want to say this happens when you interface with external specifications. OpenNIPE has that weird lateral complexity to it because of the rivals working together. On the other hand, Unicode has sort of longitudinal complexity, you might say. Those are not isolated cases. External standards don't arrive in the form that's ideal for you. You take what you get there. So without a prefab solution, the next thing I did was just sort of dig in to see what other pro-freedom or freedom-adjacent standards publishers do. Here again, the bad thing is that none of them are presenting their license as something off-the-shelf community you're free or encouraged to reuse. So this is a bit fake. There's not really a palette to choose from, but I looked anyway. And I want to highlight a couple of these that I think are instructive, because there's some good takeaways. The W3C, probably the most freedom-ish of these organizations, they actually have two licenses, and they're distinct from each other in some important ways. One of them is the software notice and license. The other is the document license. They're mixed up. A lot of things you'd think would be on one are actually on the other. For instance, the font-related ones are a complete blend. Progressive font enrichment is one of those, and incremental font transfer is the other, even though those work together. But some things that are important here is these licenses, particularly the document license, they talk about implementation, so that's already an improvement. On the other hand, the documentation license has a lot of W3C-specific language in it, like it references pointing out the standards track status and a lot of things that are about how W3C does its standards. It mentions that you can use code examples, which is useful for my case because of regular expressions and things. But it is hyper-specific in the way that it says that to web IDL and CSS and things that are declared, clearly marked examples. I don't feel like that's general enough for reuse. It's a long tail of what could be a reusable snippet. The other thing is it knows that you can quote from it in your implementation, which is also really important because people do that. They put quotes in comment blocks in the source code to explain the intent. And you want that to be non-burdensome. So there's a lightweight notice that you put in the W3C case. The other organization worth really looking at is the IETF, which its official license has this creepy name that sounds like they meet in a vault underneath a mansion or something. Some new points here, though, it knows that translation is allowed, which the W3C does not. And that's pretty important, especially if you're dealing with a project like the one I did, which is all about global language support. It also, differently though, it defines the terms of quotation by the length of the document as 1/5 of the document, which is an interesting distinction. I don't know how great that is. You want those terms to be easy to follow, in particular because the quotes might start out as a paragraph together, but then when you refactor the code, you have to split that up. And if you end up putting a big notice on every single line of that, that's not ideal. A few other things I researched which are not worth getting into. The ISO process is a monstrosity, as you would expect. The whole machinery of international global politics is involved in that. Plus, there are different terms on most of the things they do. OpenAPI, I sort of thought this project that I was on sounded like an API first. It sounds great, but apparently it's actually only about machine discoverable HTTP application services. I think I quit reading. It's like 15,000 words long. I'm not exaggerating. I counted. There is more written about open standards from the OSI and from a lot of governments. And that actually gets pretty different. Most of the talk there is not about the licensing of the document. It deals with patents, intellectual property things, which you heard about in the previous session. But it also deals with the process over time, like who decides who is participating, how do you make and publish updates. That's about it. That's as much about the standards body as the specification itself. And it gets into deep questions about the difference between standard and specification. for our project, the GitHub repo participation is pretty wide open. We've got a loose, low-impact method incorporating changes, but that's because we're piggybacking on the way the GitHub site works. And we're kind of limiting that by virtue of not having a license assigned. But it's good for thought. I did also look at some other things like the Zyph.org AV codecs, which are software licenses, and some things like that, like programming languages that tend to have their own unique license. There's really too much there to generalize from. So if there's not an off-the-shelf answer, I guess we're cooking one. So the question is, what would we like to see? I made a list of these. Big license doesn't want you to know this, but you can do that. The first couple things that are pretty obvious, you know, distributed, whole or in part. Implementation, we want to be clear that that's not the same thing as reproducing the text itself. Modifications is trickier, right? Like, this open question because it ties into the participation model stuff. Anyone can make a fork, a pull request on GitHub, that's good, but we don't want there to be a whole bunch of incompatible things floating around. So that connects to stuff like trademarks and how you manage the canonicity of your document. The end there is the stuff that is, I think, maybe more interesting in a practical sense. The quotation issue, I'm split on that. W3C defines it by purpose. It's in the implementation section. It's not a separate grant. The IETF says it's about length. I'm not sure that I think one of those is better than the other, particularly with posting the notices and rearranging things. Should you do that at the file level? I don't know. Same thing with the quotations of code that people might reuse. Should that be a separate license? The Python license does that. It specifies that code snippets are, or should you bake that into the license?
Okay, check, 1, 2.
And we're back on the air. Okay, thank you, Tom. Thank you, other guy whose name I don't know yet, but we'll meet later. Yeah. Yes, so, okay, I wrote things in pseudocode because I wanted people to implement it themselves. You can't do that with a regular expression. That's what makes them regular expressions. But where do you draw the line there? There's things like state tables. Okay, the representation of that is not the markdownness. It's the actual table. So it's worth thinking about exactly how you specify code and functional things that people could use in their implementation. Anyway, and like I said, there's a few things not discussed here, like patent and IP grants. In my own project, we avoided that because we're sort of covered by implementing OpenType and Unicode. Other projects might not be. Let me go back one. Anyway, this is where I'm leaving it. As it is, I guess we're going to put our own license together. I don't know. That might be a whole debate worth it. If I have missed some obvious solution, please tell me. I'd like this to be easier in the future for future specificators. It's surprising that this is not a topic that comes up often, even though I'm saying that it does happen. We just don't talk about it. There's a lot of things like on freedesktop.org, kind of specifications, but you know, we don't necessarily think of them that way. We don't think that, you know, Dbus or AppStream or something needs to have all this, you know, furniture around it, because it's sort of like flying by the seat of their pants. And there's always going to be new bits of technology from the community that have this issue. Might be jump ahead there. Anyway, that's my time. Do get in touch. You can actually visit the GitHub repo, the third link down there. The license thing is a pinned issue, so you can go look at it. And then here are the citations I mentioned earlier from the actual screenshots and things. That's where I'm leaving it. Thank you for your attention. Thanks for having me back a third time.